This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 473 in the series. This session shares part of the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, February 23rd. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Some of the school committee members, central office personnel, and key guests were in the council chambers. The remainder, along with the public, were remote via conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. I've split the just over 2 hour and 50 minute meeting into three logical segments. First, this covers the opening through the JF Kennedy presentation, approximately an hour and 9 minutes. Second, covers the presentation facilitated amongst the town administrator, Jamie Helen, health director, Kathleen Liberty, fire chief, Jim McLaughlin, covering the COVID-19 vaccine status update. This runs approximately 43 minutes. The third, from town administrator Jamie Helen and facilities director Mike D'Angelo, on the UVGI filter installation update through to the end of the public meeting, approximately 58 minutes. They do enter executive session, not to return to public session. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda and to my notes. The meeting packet folder will hold the other documents released for this meeting. As we go to press, the superintendent's report is not yet posted to the meeting folder. So let's listen to this segment of the school committee meeting of February 23rd, 2021.
Jamie is also here with Mike D'Angelo to talk about ventilation. I know we had some questions at the last meeting. Been continuing to give you updates through the status report, but thought it would be good to hear from the experts themselves related to the updates on our HVAC ventilation projects.
Just really quickly before Mike gets started, just to summarize while he's putting on the buttons here. You know, this is good, hopefully, in talking about this UVGI stuff, which I know you guys have talked about a few times. You know, when we saw the federal stimulus money, you know, I think, Mike, it was probably last May we actually began this. And we certainly recognize that UVGI is not the industry standard, nor is it something that's a minimum requirement for kids to be in school or any other dynamic that's out there. But in talking about this with Mike and the superintendent, we know air quality in general is always a concern to a lot of educators and parents and kids. And when Mike brought this forward with his team that's here tonight, you know, we did take advantage of it. Because I think at the end of the day, whether we get the shots or not, you know, soon this year for September, you know, we've tried to prioritize federal spending towards this project, with the idea to get, to try to make as many teachers and parents and students and educators feel as comfortable as possible. This is an anxious time. We understand that. It's anxious because of COVID, but it's also anxious after COVID, we believe, in terms of just general the light that this has shined on public health and viruses and bacteria and air quality, particularly in school buildings. You know, I hope that when Mike gets done with just this portion of the presentation, but also as we hopefully get more schools completed in the months ahead, I hope that the school community tries to, I hope this brings a little bit extra amount of comfort. I know the filters in the HEPA filters in the buildings bring a tremendous amount of support, but we are looking for feedback from a lot of folks about how this works and how this makes them feel when they're in the buildings, and does the data show that, you know, ultimately this is probably one of the safest places you'll be, is actually in the high school. So I just wanted to mention that really quick before Mike got started, because a lot of the commitment to this is really with the idea to try to bring as much mental comfort to people as possible as they enter back into schools, whenever that might be. So thank you. Mike.
Hello, all. School committee, Dr. Ahern, all the members, people watching tonight. So I just want to go over, I started at the beginning when I put this together, and everything we've been doing for months, And so everything really goes back down to one thing, is making buildings safe. Safe for the people that work in them, safe for the people that go to school in them. That's been what we have focused on since day one. For everybody in town, for schools, for public safety, for people working in this building, for people working in every building. So that's what I, that's where I build this. I want to acknowledge one of the people. So Steve DiGiacomo, the principal of Energy Management Associates, a lot of the stuff in here are slides that he provided me. Steve and I have been working together since the early summer, and we started bidding these projects. Steve's a local resident, had three daughters graduate from Franklin High School, runs his business out of home office in Franklin, but has big clients in Boston, Harvard School of Public Health, one of the big buildings, 50-story building downtown, Northeastern. So we started bidding, and the contractor who has gotten every project and has just completed the high school, Barbara Ayotte, is here from Guardian Energy. She's the vice president of sales and marketing for Guardian. These projects have not been easy from a, not from a management standpoint, but I'll have Barbara talk, say a few words a little later about, you know, we ordered this stuff. We had the kickoff meeting for the high school first week in April, and we're still, we just got it completed last Wednesday. So when we started, you know, in the beginning, nobody knew anything about what to do. We didn't know how the virus was transmitted. We started cleaning. We started brought our employees back, screened employees, screened visitors, and we spent time before we all went home, during the time we were home, and after we started getting people back, disinfecting with these ultrastatic spray guns. All surfaces, they work really well. We had 10 of them a year, way before this thing even started. Now I have like 30 of them. We disinfect every school and town building every night with these guns. We have a large store of disinfectant. And then in back in late April, Steve DiGiacomo, who I've known for 15, 18 years, was an energy management person who worked on a batch of energy projects for us, and National Grid paid him to work in my office for like 3 months to work on energy saving things. Well, when this whole thing started, he started working on what he could do to combat the virus and going through all the different things that were on the market and researching them in much more detail and talking with people. So why UVGI? UVGI has been around forever. It was used in the 40s to kill virus and bacterias. Upper air UVGI was used in Germantown, Pennsylvania, to kill tuberculosis. Tuberculosis is really hard to kill, but we have pictures of a classroom from the 40s with upper air UVGI units trying to get rid of that outbreak of tuberculosis. So it started in the 40s with the tuberculosis outbreaks. And then in the 1990s, when George W. Bush was president, he spent billions and billions of dollars with Homeland Security doing 9 studies that of what it could kill. It all started with anthrax. Everybody was mailing around the little envelopes full of powder. All of a sudden they said, oh, it kills anthrax. Let's do a lot of studies. Let's figure out, you know, what else it kills. So the results of the 9 studies actually came up with a what they call a K factor. It's a multiplication factor in a formula that shows how much light intensity, like watts per square foot, you need to kill every virus and bacteria, which made it, so that's when the science was done. Now it's engineering to figure out, you know, what do you got? How much do you need? What do you put in? So the EPA Homeland Security, there were 9 studies done, and it could kill bacteria up to a 99.9% kill rate. And this is right from one of the Homeland studies. This next slide is the, it's all the things they look at. This is just like the first page, but if you go down the bottom in yellow, you'll see coronavirus. And this many watts per UVGH, watts per square meter, this is what it takes to kill it. So SARS has been around for a while. They came up with all these things back then. So we had stuff to work with. So how do we disinfect with UVGI? There's really 4 things, or 3 things. You could do UVGI lamps and air handlers, UVGI lamps and return ducts, and what's called upper air UVGI. And you'll see on the next slide. So what we do is we bring the air out of the building, and then we run, when the air returns to the unit where you're mixing some return air and some fresh air, we subject it to the UV, it kills the virus, and then the air that gets pumped back in the building is corona-free. I mean, you all heard that, like, at one point, early in the process, there was a woman who went to a restaurant in Wuhan. She sat with 4 people at her table. She was non-symptomatic. The 4 people at her table got it. Mm-hmm. But then some people way in the back of the restaurant, right under an air conditioning diffuser, blew right on them, and they all got it too. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're combating. So these are, the larger view is kind of what we're doing. We're putting them in air handlers. It's a batch of rosy UV lights, or just above that, in return ducts coming back into the air handler. And over to the right, you'll see a couple, these are upper air UVGI sterilization units. They could be used directly in rooms. They don't radiate. They have filter. They push it up into the air so it's swirling in the top of the room. There's a batch of these at Horace Mann right now in the isolation room and in the computer labs on the second floor. They were just hard to do. There's a lot of solutions, and we tried to filter or tried to fit all the solutions to the correct application. So DESC came out and said, everybody needs to put in MERV 13 filters in their units. Mm-hmm. So everyone in the state went out and ordered MERV 13 filters. Most units in a lot of older schools couldn't take a MERV 13 filter. Unit ventilators in classrooms can't take a MERV 13 filter. All you're gonna do is push less air into a classroom, not more. So when you go look at this next slide, the high school has MERV 13 filters in it. None of our other schools do. The units weren't designed for them when they were built. They have, say, MERV 8 filters, but even a MERV 13 filter will only catch 41% of coronavirus. So that's not something I would bet my life on. Mm. So we moved on and moved into UVGI lab systems. So they can kill 90 to 99% of a first pass kill as it goes through. They kill bioaerosols. It works for SARS, tuberculosis, and at a slightly lower rate for influenza A. So this stuff really works. And this is the same, actually this is the slide with the coronavirus on it. So what is the real science behind this? I'm not trying to get too far out here with this, mm-hmm. but what you can see is the top little molecule. What happens is when the UV hits it, the photons break the molecule, the bonds between the molecule apart, and then it just ceases to be a coronavirus molecule. Hmm. And I won't go into that like any deeper than that, but these are all proven theories. So it's been around for a while, but say when Franklin High School was built, there's a UVGI water bacterial sterilizer in the boiler room. So when we built the high school, it's designed to take all the rainwater off the roof, and it goes down into a 30,000 gallon tank that we buried out back. When we use the water to flush toilets, when the pumps come on and starts pumping the water, that metal tube is clear on the inside, has six UVGI lights in it that energize and kill all the bacteria in the water, so the water we're pushing out has no bacteria in it. We're just using it in the toilets, but it still has no bacteria in it. Franklin High School was built in 2012. This was already designed and lots of people out there were using it. So we're using things that aren't that unusual. Mm-hmm. This was kind of a thing that a lot of us started talking about it, the owner of our HVAC company. And then it was actually Steve that started sending us emails that said, hey, this does viruses too. This works, mm-hmm. you know, let's get together via Zoom. which we did on one Friday afternoon in April. And it was the owner of my HVAC company, Steve DiGiacomo, and myself. So three mechanical engineers watching PowerPoints and talking about UVGI sterilization on the nicest day of the start of the spring, when we all should have been doing something else, like being outside. But this is what we get into. So this is one of the big air handlers on Franklin High. These things are about 12 feet tall. They're huge. You climb in them and walk in them. They have lights in them. That's what made this this idea so good. We started with the high school. We did the entire high school for $129,000, all 304,000 square feet. There's 12 of these that sit on two levels of the roofs, and it was the perfect project. That's why we bid it first. The other projects are a little harder, but this is the most bang for your buck. You couldn't have even bought filters for that kind of money. Mm-hmm. This is a picture of the UVGI light tubes in the air handler. They're a clear tube. There's a whole system made. It comes from Gruffin Systems down in Georgia. They make every component. And it's really not that complicated. Guardian, most of this stuff is installed by electricians. They worked through the high school, put this all stuff together, learned a lot. Because very few people have done this. When we started talking about this, the only places that had done it were the New York Stock Exchange, Walter Reed Medical Hospital, the College of the Army. You know, nobody in this part of the country had really installed it. there's two guys that were on the walk, the commissioning walkthrough, Dr. Driver and Steve DiGiacomo, and they're heading up this week to Northeastern to commission all their stuff. Mm-hmm. Most of the colleges have it. UNH installed stuff over the summer. BU, there's everybody, all the big places did this. It's a way to, when you take a big lecture hall, you can put it in, you can sterilize the air, but they're still all sitting 6 feet apart. Mm-hmm. Exposure to UVGI, the amount of intensity we're using to kill this virus is very harmful to humans. The doors have warning labels on them. There's a switch on the doors, a magnetic switch. If you open the door, they shut off. If you turn off the unit, they shut off. I mean, we spent a lot of time and effort making sure that people didn't get hurt. If you are looking at a UV light that's illuminated, it's like welding without a mask. It burns your retinas. It's very dangerous for human beings. So we spent a lot of time and we tested all these, besides doing intensity measurements on the Wednesday, we tested all the safeties to make sure that nobody could inadvertently get hurt by this stuff. And it isn't just the high school we've been working on. Last summer, we, with a capital project, we placed four rooftop units at Keller Sullivan. Two of them were just outside air only, but two of them were the main office, the whole complex that includes the nurse's office and everything, and the media center. And this stuff had gotten close enough so that when we bought the units from Train, you see a little black like door that's mm-hmm. sealed up there. Mm-hmm. You shut the unit down, you open the tray, and we got UV lights that came shipped with the units. So those got done actually before anything else got done that we were doing. And that took out quite a bit. We only have the cafeteria and the two gyms left to do with big units on the roof at Keller Sullivan. And that's where they're going next. This is the Horace Mann gym. Behind these silver access panels, they've had the lighting systems and wiring installed. Our control contractors are working in there now, tying the stuff in. They're all electrified, so that'll be the next building that comes online. All the big areas at the Horace Mann Oak ECD complex will be sterilized. The gyms, the cafeteria, the main office, the auditorium. So, and right now, Guardian is up at Remington Jefferson. They should be out of there this week. Go to Keller Sullivan. And then there's two town buildings that are being done in this phase, the library and the senior center. So this is the commissioning of the high school on February 17th. Six of us were up in the building. What you see in the little purple thing is an intensity meter that reads the amount of light output, and then from there you calculate your kill rate. So this, so one of the guys put his phone in here. So he put his phone in and then closed the door. And that's what it looks like inside the air handler after these lights come on. And you could never see that. Although he was talking, I'm gonna put my phone in. I said, you put yours in first. If it works and it doesn't kill your phone, maybe I'll try mine too. But that's, And it doesn't look that complicated, but it really works. And the United States government has brought us all this. So I just want to give Barbara a couple minutes. We've had tremendous supply problems, and yeah. She can give you a few of those, and then we'll move on to the next topic that has just another 10 slides.
So thank you so much for having me here today. Mike was asking me to talk a little bit about what some of the challenges were when we were going through this exercise. And so there were four main challenges, the first being actually getting the hardware to do these UVGI installations. That has been the biggest challenge, not only through the high school project, which was the bid number one, but also the schools and the town buildings for project number two. The second challenge has been the learning curve, which all of us in this room are experiencing as a result of COVID. And as Mike mentioned, there really wasn't anyone in Massachusetts that had installed this before. And Guardian was very thankful to win this bid because this is a very strategic project for us. And as Mike also mentioned, there are three different types that we've been installing. One is the in unit, which means in the rooftop unit. And that was what we installed at the high school. So we're pretty much experts at that now, since we did all 12 units. The second style was called the induct type of system. And that was the system that Mike showed the picture where you had the two access doors. So with each of these types, we had a learning curve, and now we're experts at that. And then the final version was the upper air unit that he also mentioned was used to kill tuberculosis and was seen in pictures in the 40s. And so now we're experts at that. So we've accomplished the second challenge. Third challenge was weather. So as you know, a lot of these units are on the roof. And with the weather of New England, it was very challenging to do the installations on the roof. But at the high school, what one of our electricians did was once he was able to get through to the unit, he just worked inside the unit. So he didn't have to worry about snow or rain. And the fourth challenge was that we could not install these while people were in the buildings. The ventilation had to be running while there were any students, staff, or teachers in the buildings. And so we had to work second shift in many cases or over the weekends to make sure that everybody was safe. So those were the four main challenges that we experienced. And we've overcome all of those challenges except for the first one I mentioned, which is the deliveries of the hardware as a result of supply and demand. Thank you.
Yeah. And so just to connect on this as we're kind of leading is, I was on a webinar for about 10 minutes in August explaining this to a large, maybe 100 people on the webinar. And I was contacted a couple days later by MSBA. I had actually sent a package to Jack McCarthy, the executive director of the MSBA, and spent many hours talking with one of their representatives about UVGI so they can answer questions and talk to new people building schools or renovating schools about the addition of this stuff to their new school buildings. So MSBA is big on this. Franklin is the first town, the first group of public schools to have done this and have it actually up and running. So that makes me feel pretty good. We're just doing it for safety. I have to stress that no matter what I do, I still can't stop a kid from coughing on another kid. You know, I can make the building safe, I can make the air safe, we can disinfect buildings, but that's kind of the end of our ability. Just so you all know, they did some work back over Christmas vacation, and today they started installing the tubes, got those in the units, and some electricians are going to be showing up in the next few days, and we're going to wire it up, and we hope to have this building running by early next week as well, with full UVGI. So the other topic is air purifiers. So you see air purifiers here tonight. We purchased roughly 650 of this larger unit. The larger air purifier units will filter the air, two of them in 1,100 square foot room, six times per hour. That's the most desirable thing by DESE, most of the engineers in the world out there. We tried to build a UV sterilization system for classrooms. We actually did build one. It's in a classroom up in Keller Sullivan, but it cost about $8,000. So that wasn't a cost-effective solution, considering we have 340 classrooms and not including the high school classrooms. So we ordered 650 of these, and we're waiting for them to come in with dread that nothing we've ordered in the past year has come in on time. And then the school administration was on another webinar that I was actually on, and DESE had offered to do some
statewide
purchasing for them. And if anyone was interested, throw your name in. So Lucas put in our name and gave him numbers, and then put me down as a contact. So when they come in, and sure enough, 2 weeks later, I get an email from a guy from the guy from the state on a Friday night at like 7 o'clock, which is a miracle. I checked my email saying, you're gonna have purifiers first thing Monday morning. And I let people know, sent out a batch of emails. And at 6:30 on Monday morning, there was a truck from California backed up to the loading dock at Horace Mann with 650 of these small air purifiers that the state picked up the tab for, a couple hundred grand. So now we've been swimming in air purifiers. But the air purifiers have done wonders in the classrooms. So HEPA filters, the only filters that will filter 99.9% of particles down to 0.1 micrometers. So that's as good as you can get. So there's two solutions that we're looking at that actually everybody agrees works. Put in the filters. HEPA filters could never be used in a commercial air handling unit. They're just so dense that you can't blow enough air through them to get any real air in the building. And that's why they're not used. I was on another webinar that our insurance company, Maya, and the Mass Facility Administrators Association, my organization, sponsored with some engineering firms. And they got a little deeper into some of this stuff and talked about opening windows and the problem with particles in the air. And they did a batch of testing with particle meters. And what happens is a 1 micron COVID molecule is so small, and it acts like a gas and it's just moving around, but it tends to grapple onto other slightly larger particles, which is a 0.3 micron particle or slightly even bigger particles. So the truth is that limiting the amount of particles in your inside air is really important in reducing the risk of a COVID airborne molecule. So I went out and bought a particle meter. It's upstairs in my office. And we went out and did some testing. So, you know, in just the schools, there's over 1,000 of these two types of air purifiers units deployed in the Franklin schools today. If you walk around a school, they're everywhere. They're in offices, classrooms, they're two in every classroom. They're in, the bigger ones are in bigger classrooms. They're in gyms. They're just all over the place. And my staff has been great pushing them out, getting them running, and got unbelievably great feedback from the teachers. So we went out And like the guy did in the webinar, we had to prove that he was right. So using the particle meter, Steve DiGiacomo and I, on the last day before February vacation and on the Tuesday at the beginning of February vacation, went through the Keller Sullivan and the Kennedy Elementary School. Now, no teachers were not there, so the units hadn't been run at all. So we took particle readings in classrooms before to get a background. We also took particle readings outside the school, which we're still gonna do a little more testing on that at dismissal and pickup, or dismissal and when people come in. Because when you have all those cars, that was one of the big things. You got all the buses puffing smoke out there. You got all the cars puffing exhaust. The particle counts in the schools he was looking at ended up being 10 times what was inside, outside at those times. So that's not a good thing. And that kind of goes against some of the initial, we all thought, because there's no COVID outside, that outside air is a great thing, but the reality is outside air has way more particles in it. But we needed to test it. So we took the, we did two things. We went to classrooms, we took background readings, and in some classrooms, we opened the windows with the purifiers off. In some windows, we kept the windows closed, but for the first time, turned on the air purifiers and set our timers on our phones for 30 minutes and got back to every room almost exactly 30 minutes after we had been there before. And what happened was when the windows were closed and the purifiers running, and after 30 minutes, just 30 minutes, the particle amount of 3 micron particles in the room decreased by 82% in just 30 minutes. With the windows open and no purifiers running, the particle count inside each of those rooms increased by 78%. I say we did the outside air. We're gonna test it a little more. Steve DiGiacomo works pretty closely with Harvard School of Public Health. There have been a number of webinars that they've spoken on that have talked about the fallacy of a window. Because if you have a window open and the air is blowing right at that side of the building, yeah, a lot of air comes in. If you have another door open, but it depends on where you are in the building, and most classrooms have a single face of windows, so there's a lot of harder details. It's not as simple, but the one thing you can always guarantee if you open the window, especially this time of year, is in thermodynamics, cold moves to hot. You can pretty much guarantee that everyone in that room will be cold. They might not get any air, but the cold will just push its way through the window, and everybody will be that's sitting in that room will be cold. And that's it.
Mike, can you just clarify? I'm going to just open up to the committee, but the UVGI, can you just say where it is now and what the schedule for that, where is it actually being installed, and what is the plan? I just didn't quite pick all that up.
So the high school's on.
Yep.
The complex schools, we're into the second one, and we've completed the install at Horace Mann, but we're doing controls now. They'll complete the Remington Jefferson by the end of this week, I believe, and then they'll be moving to Keller Sullivan to do that job. And so after that, sometime in the spring, once we put in the controls, the three complex schools will be completed, and then future, it probably, the stuff has gotten extremely hard to get. Because when we started this even, it was, we were in pretty early, but now it's getting harder because everybody's doing it. But by the end of, sometime towards the end of the school year, probably it's, we hope to get everything in Franklin done. We did release a contract to Guardian for a third phase, and we're still working with Jamie and Sarah as to the final of this all. And the CARES Act paid for all this stuff.
Committee, I'm just going to open up. Jen, questions, comments, follow-up?
No, I don't have any questions. You know, I think it was a really, you know, informative presentation. I'm not quite sure much of it really I understand or it relates to my decision-making, but, you know, thank you for presenting. And, you know, those who are curious, Mike and I are not related, so that's a fun fact.
Oh.
that's it for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Fun fact. Tim, Keenan, follow-up?
I'm good. Questions? Thank you.
Okay. Judy?
I'm good.
MJ?
No questions. Very interesting, Mike. Thank you.
Denise?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Elise?
No questions. Thank you.
And me? I just, you know, thank you for this, because this was really helpful to see Franklin on the cutting edge of all this, you know, and it's really, and for all your efforts, you know, and thank you, you know, just for making this happen. It's pretty good, you know. Thank you.
All doing everything we can.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Okay, moving along whenever you're ready, Sarah.
I'm just going to move over.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
One takeaway that I would just emphasize is the cutting edge piece in terms of exceeding what is expected in terms of the ventilation and being kind of well positioned with UVGI where appropriate and feasible. You heard that in the classrooms it was cost prohibitive. They did try it, they built a prototype and tried it, but it would have been cost prohibitive. But in exchange, you see the HEPA filters, the air purifiers, we have plenty of them, and they are as effective, just a different solution.
That's incredible that this in every classroom. Yeah, that's great.
Dr. Hearn, could I add, there's been questions about the HEPA filters. Mike did purchase replacement filters as well. The life of a filter is estimated at 6 months or 3,000 hours. And if you do 3,000 hours over an 8-hour day, that's about a year. We have a schedule because of when they were installed to do, they're part of the annual maintenance that we have already in our buildings, which happen over that winter break recess and in the summer. In preparation for school. So these filter replacements moving forward could happen and would happen on that same schedule, just to kind of put that out there for folks.
That's good information. Good. Dr. Hearn?
Okay. Next on the agenda is an action item for you for discussion and action. Miriam can answer any questions, but there's a memo detailing refund of lunch fees for seniors given free lunch for students through the rest of the school year. So I recommend approval of the request of Miriam Goodman, School Business Administrator, to refund seniors' lunch balances for the 2020-2021 school year as discussed.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. Okay. questions, comments, discussion on the motion? Anybody? No one? Okay. Seeing none, the vote, roll call vote will come on the motion. All those in favor of recommending approval of the request school business of Miriam Goodman, School Business Administrator, to refund seniors' lunch balances for the 2021 school year as discussed. Jen D'Angelo.
Yes.
Tim Keenan.
Yes.
Judith Bonfeffer.
Yes.
Mary Jane Schofield.
Yes.
Denise Spencer.
Yes.
Elise Stokes.
Yes.
And Ann Bergen. Motion carries. Next item.
The next item for discussion is a reopening of school status update. And just briefly, I'll go through a couple of points. We had February vacation, so much of the updates are in the health metrics as well as new guidance that has come out. We are and have been in the yellow for the last 3 weeks based on the average daily cases and percent positivity. Massachusetts as a state has dropped from red to yellow in the past 2 weeks. The local cases in Franklin as affecting the Franklin Public Schools have also reduced. Where 4 weeks ago we had 31 positive cases that week, and the week of break was the week prior to break was 11, and last week was 6. We did not have data related to the students and staff in quarantine last week, but you can see that we are experiencing fewer individuals in quarantine as a result of the reduced metrics. It is causing some relief with respect to staffing our buildings and substitute coverage and things like that, more predictable on a day-to-day basis. The state requested structured learning time data again. So that was submitted by Dr. Edwards prior to break. And we're still meeting the average number of hours in hybrid and remote for the first 2 weeks of February. I had mentioned earlier tonight that we had a physical distancing survey. We closed it yesterday, and so it'd be premature to release information tonight. Mm-hmm. But we are reviewing that. Pool testing continues to evolve. We have initial plans for the work to begin at Oak and Horace Mann as two trial sites before going to the bigger all of the schools in the district, and Paula and Lucas and the building principals and assistant principals in particular have been doing a tremendous amount of work with Project Beacon to do some onboarding and distribute materials to families. We do have some more information to push out to our families, including FAQs and pros and cons, which will be posted to our website soon. Transportation guidance was updated, and I think that this is pretty notable. This is one of the big hurdles or big logistical pieces around having more students come to school in person. So new transportation guidance was issued on February 11th, right before February vacation, from the Department of Education. We have been operating at about a third of capacity on our school buses, and the expectation has been around physical distancing in particular, mask wearing, hand hygiene, assigned seating, and daily cleaning on the school buses. The Department of Ed's guidance has been modified primarily around the distancing expectations, where they have lifted the distancing expectations, which will result in larger bus capacities. Although they are suggesting that we continue to encourage alternative transportation, such as walking or riding a bike or carpooling driving drop-off at school. So that, I think, has some implications if we think about more students coming into the school building. If we were to add students to the school building with the old transportation guidance, we probably would have to do something like double runs and staggered schedules. Mm-hmm. So logistically, this creates a little bit more flexibility, although probably raises a bit of concern for families and staff potentially of those bus riders. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they've emphasized is that all of the other mitigation strategies would still be in effect. And they emphasize, and this is where some of the details around windows being open matters. They emphasize windows being open on the buses, but with multiple windows being open on the buses, that's really to get that airflow mm-hmm. through the bus mm-hmm. and to get things and keep things moving. And there is data that was attached to this guidance that shows the movement of airflow through the bus with the windows open is markedly higher than when the windows are closed. So that's just some information that we're digesting. And then the other guidance that we're, like many other districts are digesting, is the CDC guidance that came out on reopening schools prior to vacation as well. And I think one of the things that I took away from this was the layered or phased mitigation plan, where you have multiple steps, the Swiss cheese model of mitigating factors to prevent coronavirus. And you have multiple measures, including masks, physical distancing, hand hygiene, cleaning, contact tracing. One of the things that they did not emphasize, but we just heard a lot about, was the ventilation as being another aspect and another layer of safety. I appreciated how they talked about how pool testing may play into instructional model decisions based on percent positivity, as well as numbers of new cases within the past 7 days. It's not the same metric that's on the that we've been keeping track of through the Department of Public Health, but they have some suggestions there, kind of emphasizing in-person learning or hybrid learning under different scenarios related to community-based transmission. So we're continuing to digest that information and consider it and think about it as we think about a return to school plan in the future. And then at the bottom there's just some recent updates. We talked about a lot about HVAC tonight, and we're continuing to support the KN1 families with that committee. So happy to take any questions or
sure
to discuss any aspects of it.
I'll just go through. Jen, questions, comments, follow-up? All set. Tim?
All set.
All set. Judy?
All set.
MJ?
I'm good.
Denise?
All set.
Elise?
No questions, thanks.
Okay, and Ian, all set. Very good. At this time, we've been trying to make sure that we allow for public comment, should there be any. Again, I would just ask that public comment be limited to 3 minutes. If one, in the interest of time, if the viewpoint has already been expressed, you know, that we understand that. If you've got a new one to offer, is there anyone? We certainly want to give people time. You see anything, too?
Yep, Selena.
Selena.
Hi there, Selena Cousin, 114 Beach Street. This was really with regards to the earlier presentation by the town administrator, but I've read with pride about the cold chain technology is based in Franklin, and it's the important role they're playing in shipping the Moderna vaccine all around. And I just am thinking out loud, I'm not really even asking a question, but I wonder if there's a way to capitalize on that company being located in Franklin, Massachusetts. I wonder if there's a way that could be capitalized on in order to highlight that company and bring the vaccinations to our Franklin teachers quicker than might be expected. Thank you.
Selena, thank you. See anything else, Denise?
I do not see any other hands.
Okay, very good. Moving right along. Information matters. Just budget subcommittee, just a reminder that we're meeting on March 3rd at 4:30. And as you know, based on our budget workshop that we did as an entire committee, we're just going to be putting all of that information out to the public, important information out to the public, because we want to be as open and transparent as possible. We knew that before COVID even hit, the town was dealing with some, fiscal challenges, and we all want to kind of work together and, sort of advocate for public schools, but also understand that, the community is facing some severe challenges, and we have to have that right balance. So that's what we're going to be working on. We're going to encourage people to get involved in the budget hearings that are coming up, both at the school level, the town level. We're all trying to work together on this, but your input, your voices are very important in all of this. So again, March 3rd, 4:30 for our budget subcommittee. And now community relations, Denise Spencer.
Yes. So as Jamie mentioned earlier, next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., we'll have our legislative forum. Senate President Karen Spilka, State Senator Becca Rausch, and State Rep Jeff Roy will be attending and answering some questions. You can find the information on the school committee website and on social media. If you have any questions, you can reach out to me directly. We do not have another meeting scheduled as of right now. And that's it.
That's it. Very good. Thank you. Policy, MJ.
We're meeting on Thursday.
Okay. Joint PCC, Judy.
We had a meeting this afternoon. I'll have the notes for it available for the presentation at our next meeting.
Sure. Okay. Substance Abuse Task Force, we met this morning, and Paula and I were talking before it tonight, just saying what a great meeting it was. Lucas, you pulled it all together, and Paula, and the contributions. But in that, just to speak briefly, and I'll turn it over to Lucas, we developed sort of the short-term goals and then long-term goals. And one of them is to get as much information out to the public about the resources that are available around the whole issue of mental health and substance use. And one of the things that I promised to sort of share and keep getting out there was that this is a tough time for many, many families. And the SAFE Coalition is there to help. They can provide resources, they can provide supports. And what Jim Derrick was saying today is sort of this idea of we've got to take the stigma away for reaching out for help. So if you know of people, if your family is suffering or in need or kids, please reach out to them. They're an incredible resource in our community. So the SAFE Coalition, you can go on their website. And Lucas, it was a great meeting, right, in terms of do you want to add? Yes.
I don't want to steal your thunder. I think you summarized it well. I just think the destigmatization of substance abuse and trying to really wrap our arms around the folks in our community. So I think for short-term goals, we've developed so many great tools and we have so many great resources and partnering with SAFE that we need to get out. And then long-term, we're starting to already put our sights on it, with many of our committees, but particularly with Substance Abuse Task Force, how can we support folks beyond just the spring, but moving into the beginning of the next school year and into the summer, you know, how can we help develop partnerships and programs for folks? So,
yeah, thanks. It's a great meeting. School Wellness Advisory. Does Elise want to, or with Lucas or Denise or?
We didn't meet over February vacation.
Oh, okay.
Our next meeting is March 16th.
Okay. Thanks, Elise. All right, I think I covered all that. New business, Dr. Hearn.
At the next meeting, Ms. Goodman and I will present the recommended budget for FY22. We will have a school highlight and more information and updates regarding reopening.
Excellent. Consent agenda.
I recommend approval of the minutes from your February 9th, 2021 school committee meeting as detailed, and I recommend approval of the budget transfers as detailed.
Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion, questions on the motion? All right. Seeing none, the roll call vote will come on the motion to accept the consent agenda. Jen?
Yes.
Tim Keenan?
Yes.
Judith Bonpepper?
Yes.
Mary Jane Schofield?
Yes.
Denise Spencer?
Yes.
Elise Stokes?
Yes.
And Ian Bergen? Yep. Carries. All right, payment of bills. I did review the bills. They are in order. We signed the warrant here. Mm-hmm. And payroll, Judy?
I also reviewed the payroll.
Okay, very good. All right. So at this time, I'm going to entertain a motion to adjourn to go into executive session. We will not be returning. I will read the reasons for going into executive session, parts A and B. Pursuant to Mass General Law, Section 38, 21A3, to discuss strategy with respect to collective bargaining with the FEA as an open meeting may have a detrimental effect on the bargaining position of the school committee and the chair so declares. And B, pursuant to Mass General Law, Chapter 30A, 21A2, to conduct strategy session in preparation for negotiations with non-union personnel. I will entertain a motion to adjourn to executive session and not return.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, roll call vote to adjourn to go into executive session. Jen?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
And Ian, yeah. Motion meeting adjourned.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.